Live from the BBC, The Naked Scientists.
And a very good evening to you in radio land and podcast land out there. We are The Naked Scientists. It's me, Dr. Kat Arney, and here with me is Dr. Dave. But also in the studio, we have two very special guests. We have Jez Wells.
Hello.
And we have Hugh Hunt.
Hello.
And they're here to discuss aspects that are very close to my heart of music and music technology. How do we hear different sounds? How are different sounds made? And how can we recreate all sorts of sounds that we thought we'd never hear again? So we're going to be
stripping down science.
Okay, let's do it.
The Naked Scientists.
This evening we've got Hugh Hunt from the engineering department in Cambridge with us, and he's now holding a knife, just a normal kitchen knife. So what are you going to do with that, Hugh?
Well, we've just heard from Ely about harmonics, which you can get from this tube. Well, actually, if you listen around pretty much anywhere, you can find harmonics all over the place. So I've got an ordinary eating knife. It's not one of those dangerous ones which you don't want to be holding by the blade. This is an ordinary knife. And if I tap it like this, I can get a nice note. I'm just holding it roughly halfway along. But if I hold it somewhere else, I can get a different note. And so depending on where you hold it, you get different notes. And if you hold it right at the end, you don't get...
That's holding it right at the very tip of the blade.
Yeah, either end, you don't get any note at all. But it's quite interesting just to explore where you have to hold a fork to get these notes.
I see you've got a big aluminium tube behind you. Is that a bigger version of the same thing?
Well, yeah, it is. It's as ever, it's always much easier to demonstrate these things cleanly if you have somehow a contrived, perfect experiment. So I've got a tube here which is about 6 foot long, a couple of metres.
It's like a scaffolding post, isn't it?
It isn't like a scaffolding post. It's hollow inside, so you can play it like a didgeridoo as well, but I won't do that now. And if I hold it at the end, it just goes thwack.
Lights.
It doesn't do anything. But if I hold it in special places, I can get really quite nice notes. I can get this one.
So you're holding it about halfway up,
There's lots of different places. I've marked this tube with different coloured strips, so I know exactly where to hold it. Now, this is getting the fifth harmonic. So it's starting from the very bottom, going up the harmonic series, and a little bit like that pipe we heard before with its harmonic series. This is the fifth one up. Then if I hold it somewhere different, I can get the sixth one up.
So it's a bit higher.
And then I can get the seventh one up if I go to... That's it.
That's a lot higher.
And I can go a bit down. I can get the fourth one, which is here.
Okay.
And I can get the third one.
So what's actually happening to the tube when you hit it?
Well, the tube is vibrating. If you imagine that you got a long piece of spaghetti, not cooked spaghetti, uncooked spaghetti, and you could bend it. You could bend it as it were in the shape of the letter C. Well, you could imagine the cooked spaghetti, if it was floating around in space, could vibrate backwards and forwards like that letter C. But you could, if you used three fingers, bend it in the shape of the letter S, and it would vibrate backwards and forwards in the shape of the letter S. And then you could go one step further and bend it in the shape of a sort of a squiggly letter, like a number three, but...
With a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. And then you can make it really serpentine and make it very wiggly. Well, it turns out that every time you introduce more bends, there's more energy in it, higher frequencies, and that's the same with light. You might know that the energy goes up with frequency.
So the pitch gets higher,
the more wobbles
you have in the rod.
So that's right. So all I'm doing with these marks on my tube here is noticing that I can pick out these different harmonics.
So basically where you're holding the rod can't be wobbling, so there must be
it's called a nodal point. And so, for instance, the fifth harmonic on this rod has got six nodal points, and the sixth harmonic has got seven nodal points, and so on. It's like if you draw that wobble, a letter S has got three spots that go through the middle, and a letter C has got two spots.
So you can do that for example, on a guitar, if you very gently put your finger against the very middle of the string. Is that the same,
principle?
Pingy sound.
So if you're playing a stringed instrument, a guitar or a cello or a violin, you can touch, you can play the note and then just touch it in the middle and you'll get an octave higher. And if you touch it a third the way along, you'll get an octave and a half higher. And this is all this harmonic series. And the harmonic series goes like this. It starts here, and then it goes 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 here, and it goes here. And so that's why you heard the last post before. That was... It's just that harmonic series.
So what Wendy was doing with the tube was driving different ones of the harmonics at different times
exactly.
So you can make the tune.
Hugh, interestingly enough, if you're going into a guitar shop to buy a new guitar, the first thing you do is test the harmonics because that will tell you whether the bridge is true or not.
Absolutely right. And the harmonics are so wonderful that composers throughout the centuries have used them in all sorts of ways. And there's a wonderful bit in Brahms' first symphony which goes like this. And that's all using harmonics, and it's played on the horns, and it's just magic.
Is this because it's very difficult to play anything other than the harmonic series on a horn?
Or? Well, yeah, but that's if you want to tell your kids to play any instrument, don't tell them to play the horn, because they're the ones that get all the blame when things don't go wrong in the concerts.
They
fluff all the notes.
We've got a question for you here, Hugh, from Andy in North Carolina. If you take a 2-litre plastic soda bottle, it's in America, and blow across the lip, you get a very low note. If you squeeze the bottle and making it flat, you get a higher note. What's going on?
Oh, well, I have to tell you that I discovered this at a party when I was a teenager. It was a New Year's Eve party in Australia. It was a very hot night, and everyone was taking off their clothes and having great fun in the pool, and I was sitting in the corner experimenting with these plastic bottles. You know, but I've become a bit less geeky since then. I've managed to find a bottle in a rubbish bin here, and so I can demonstrate this for you. So I've got a little plastic bottle, and I'm going to blow the note.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we all know that if I put a little bit of water in the bottle, we expect the note to go up. So, gluck, gluck, gluck. There we go. You heard that, so that's water. And here the note is... higher,
yeah.
Which is great. So I'll pour that water back into my container here and back to where we were.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, if I squeeze a bottle like this... and make it smaller, surely the note should also go up. But what happens is I get...
That's much lower.
It goes down.
And you think, crikey, that doesn't do what I expected to do. Physics is wrong. But now, the reason why it was very important back those many years ago on that hot, balmy night when everyone was taking off their clothes that I was at a swimming pool was because you can actually do a rather interesting experiment. If I take that bottle... which I've squeezed, and I lower it into the water. I've got a tub of water here, and I'm going to lower it into the water, and as I lower it in, I'm not squeezing the bottle at all anymore. It's squeezed, and I go into the water.
Goes up again.
That's amazing.
So the question is, why is it when I lower it into the water, and it starts to give you a clue? And the answer is this, that when the bottle is perfectly round, then we know that round things are stiff and solid. That's why pressure vessels are round. That's, in fact, why a Coke bottle with pressure in it is round, because that's the strongest shape. But when you squeeze it, you make the sides flat, and that makes them weak. So actually, you can tell when you put your finger on the side of the bottle, you will actually be able to feel the flat bits are vibrating a lot. And that means that the bottle has an effective size which is bigger than it really is, so because it's actually moving some of the space around
it. So it's actually got to move the bottle itself.
It's got to move the bottle itself. Yeah, and now it's very interesting. You can do a similar sort of thing. Is if you take a bottle which isn't a round bottle, but it's a square bottle. So this is an unpressurized mineral water bottle, and it has a note. And even without doing anything to it at all, no squeezing or anything, I lower that into the water, and the note will go up, even just because those square sides. And I'm not sure whether this
is stopping it from vibrating.
He's having to.
Oh, my vessel's not big enough here. I can't. Anyway, you can try that for yourself, and it is absolutely amazing.
That That's absolutely incredible. Do we have some questions on the phones, Mandy?
We have got David, who's given us a call from Ipswich, and we've been trying to get him back, but we can't, so we shall put the question for you, David. The question that he wants to know is, that he would like to know, could sound waves be heard on Mars? So basically, could they travel through the atmosphere all the way to Mars?
Well, I suppose there are two questions here. One is, if we were had a very loud screaming baby on the Earth, could somebody on Mars, in theory, hear the baby screaming? Or would you need to have a special interplanetary baby monitor? And the answer is no, you wouldn't be able to hear the sound from Earth on Mars, because the space in between Earth and Mars is a vacuum. And there's a wonderful experiment you can do where you put an alarm clock under a bell jar, and you start the vacuum pump going, and you get all the air evacuated, and you can't hear the bell, even though the bell is still going. But then the question is, well, what if your baby was in the bedroom in your Mars planetary home? And would you be able to hear the baby crying from downstairs in your bedsit? And the answer would depend very much on the atmosphere on Mars. And my understanding is that there's not very much atmosphere.
I think it's about 1% of the atmosphere on Earth.
And so it's getting close to a vacuum. So there are two things. One is that the amount of energy that you can pump into the atmosphere is less, and also the speed of sound will be a lot faster, and so all sorts of things will be different. But of course, it's a bit of a funny question, because with 1% of the atmosphere, we wouldn't really be breathing the atmosphere, and so we'd probably do it all through microphones. But by then, we'd probably have invented transmitting, communicating in the seventh dimension.
So the moral of this, if you've got a really loud baby, send it to Mars.
Send it to Mars.
Absolutely, right.
Do you mean as in grandmas?
Send it to grandmas as well.
OK, now, Hugh, you've got one more demo for us with a teacup, I believe. Oh. A mug.
A coffee cup. A mug.
This is brilliant.
Oh, sorry, I'm just moving that around a bit. There we go.
I'll help people talking about sound having problems with the mics.
Yeah, there we go. Now, I've got a regular mug here. It doesn't have any logo on it. What's interesting is that if I get a teaspoon and just tap on the rim...
So you're just tipping straight opposite the...
Yeah, imagine that you stir it, and then you just stir your sugar in, and then you just want to tap the rim to get the drip off the end of the spoon. This is what we all do. Now, what you want to do is try this. Try tapping somewhere, and then try tapping somewhere else. And what you should find is that the note depends on where you tap it. So if I tap near the handle, I get a low note.
Now about 45 degrees.
45 degrees around, I get a higher note. And then at 90 degrees around, back to low. 45 degrees, another 45 degrees high. And then opposite the handle, low.
So what's going on here, Hugh?
Well, we if you take your mug, and if you put water in it, I'm just filling it up 3/4 of the way full of water, the note's gone down. So what that tells us is that if you add weight, if you add mass, then notes will come down. Just think of a mass vibrating on a rubber band. If it's heavy, it'll vibrate slowly. If it's light, it'll vibrate fast. Well, what's happening is that the way that the cup is vibrating is a bit like, imagine you squeezed it to make it oval shape. Well, you can't really see that it's going oval shape. But if it was a plastic cup, you could see when you squeeze it would go oval shape. But when you're hitting it, you're actually making it vibrate in an oval shape. And if you hit it opposite the handle, let's say, then that oval shape makes the handle move.
So it's going from sort of oval shape
one way to oval shape the other way. So, yeah, imagine you take your cup and sort of wobble it oval one way, oval the other. So,
yeah.
Okay. But if I hit 45 degrees around from the handle, then do the same thing with the oval shape, the handle doesn't move as much because the handle is at that point, which is called the nodal point, which is the intersection of the two ovals at right angles
to each
other. So it's not wobbling. So that means that the mug appears to be less heavy for the 45 degrees around, therefore the note's higher. So that's the less heavy, heavier.
So it's less heavy, so it can move faster, so it's higher.
Yeah, that's it.
Got a question.
More questions, yeah.
Got a question for you from Steph on the email. My question is, when I play my flute, sometimes it gets a really screechy noise. What is it? It only happens when I play medium E natural.
Oh, well, that's... instruments are quirky things. It's a bit like cars. You know, you might be driving along, and when you go at 57.5 miles an hour, the steering wheel starts to wobble. There's just a particular characteristic of your car. Some things you can fix and other things you can't. Some of you who play cellos or stringed instruments might know about the wolf note. There's a certain note which is just does funny things. And it could be that it's an interaction between the acoustic mode, the note you're playing, which is all to do with the air, and the actual structure of the flute, the metal that the flute's made of. And that's very important. For instance, you can think of a saxophone and a clarinet. Clarinet's made of wood and the saxophone's made of metal. And that's essentially what makes the two instruments really sound quite different. And so there is an interaction between the sound, the air, and the metal. And, you know, maybe that's why you pay your extra £500 for an ultra-good flute. And I think Stradivarius might have something to say about this. Not that he made flutes.
We've had a question in from John, who's in upstate New York, so over in the States. And he says, quite an odd question, is white noise something to do with gravity or the Big Band? Now, we're wondering if he actually means the Big Bang here, or if you've got some kind of white noise played in the style of Hey Big Spender. What's white noise?
Well, white noise...
What's the sound of the Big Bang?
Well, if I play a nice pure tone like this one, then that's got a particular frequency. But if I were to play all notes together,
Then
that starts to be what we might call noise. Well, let's imagine that you played every single tone you could possibly imagine, not just the white and black notes on the piano, but also the notes in between. Well, in acoustics, we would call that white noise. Well, it's not just sound where you find vibration. You find vibration and waves on the surface of the water. You'll find vibration. Actually, light is a wave. You'll find waves in slinky springs. You'll find waves all over the place. Well, you might have heard of things like the cosmic background radiation or things like this. Well, actually, these are all electromagnetic waves of various kinds, and waves, light, can be just as much white noise is anything. So the reason it's called white noise is we know that white light is made up of all the colours of the rainbow, lots of all frequencies all at once. So white noise is taken from white light. And yes, when there was the Big Bang, yes, all sorts of frequencies were emitted.
But I think with the Big Bang, there's a peak frequency, and so I can't remember what it is at the moment, but there is one peak frequency, so it's not all the frequencies at once, so it probably isn't really white noise.
Yeah, so if you fire that gun off in Coventry Cathedral and manage to miss one of the trebles, then you get a response, which actually the gunfire does contain all frequencies equally, but the Coventry Cathedral will respond at particular frequencies is what makes it Coventry Cathedral. Likewise, the universe responded to the impulse of the Big Bang in a certain way, and we're left with what we've got.
Wasn't there some research a little while ago? I think the universe vibrates at, is it a low B flat?
Oh, yes. Well, that's right. Well, Carolyn Crawford, who's in the astronomy department here, published a paper on this, and... I think it was 16 octaves below the bottom of the piano. And essentially that means that this galaxy somewhere way beyond Mars anyway is vibrating, is pulsating. You know, imagine sort of breathing in and out. And it's pulsating at, well, what's 2 to the minus 16? You know, very slowly anyway.
We've got a really, really quick question here, and we have from Susie in Norwich. She says, what is ultrasound? Is it actually sound?
Ultrasound is sound, but it's so high a frequency that it's beyond, you can't hear it. And the frequency is so high, the wavelength's so small, but it is sound, you just can't hear it.
So now all I have to do is say thank you so much to our wonderful guests, Hugh Hunt from Cambridge and Jez Wells from York, to Mandy Morton, the desktop extraordinaire, to Dave and me, I'm Dr. Kat, and also to our backroom team, Anna, Petra and Holly. So thanks very much.
But I haven't quite finished yet, Kat, because we've been talking about music for the whole show and all the different aspects of it. But a little bird tells me that when you're doing this, you are playing your own harp. Here is Dr. Kat to play us out.
sorting out the sparks from the quarks. The Naked Scientists. For more information, get online at nakedscientists.com.